Buddy Deuce Lee, as he dribbles, gets doubled. He's at driving. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
Got it.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Friends, enemies, anyone in between, welcome to another edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND. I'm Leo Stauder, your sports director here at WZND. I'm joined by our producer and director of Positive Vibes.
Oh yeah, that's
Joseph
me.
Kennedy. And our normal co-host, Joey Dwyer, is not with us tonight. He actually has a tryout with Bishop Sycamore football. I guess there's some turnover
so he thinks he can make the team.
So we're now joined by a special guest, Mr. Jose Sandoval from the News and Sports Department. Wake up, normal legend Jose. Jose himself is here in the flesh. How you doing, Jose?
I'm feeling absolutely amazing to be on here with you guys. Let me tell you this. I have wanted to do this for quite a long time.
Man.
I wasn't here last year, so,
yeah.
You know, I'm kind of glad. I'm glad I'm in the studio with you guys, although Joey had to flake, but it's whatever.
Yeah, man, he just had to go pursue his football dreams over there at Bishop Sycamore in Ohio. You know how it goes. But, Jose, it's great to have you on because it's your last semester here too, man, so it's really awesome to get you on for a full show. You definitely deserve it for all the hard work you've been putting into this station too, man.
I mean, coming from the both of you guys, I really do appreciate that. So let me just tell you guys.
Let's have a good one.
Yeah.
Let's have a good one.
And
you know?
For Jose, we're returning to our Wake Up Normal roots. We've hosted a show together before. Joe's
Ooh.
The newcomer here, so
this is a bit of a clash of worlds here,
where I'm with one of my former co-hosts, my current co-host, so we got a lot going on here. And we have a great show planned for you tonight.
Yeah,
we have
a lot.
An interview with a Central Catholic High School football coach, Kevin Brott. That's coming up in the next segment. We got a giveaway we'll have coming up in a little bit. We're going to talk about some ISU action, some Chicago Bears stuff, and some Chicago Bulls. So let's get right into it, guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's opening weekend here for Redbird football. Coach Spack's boys are taking on the Butler Bulldogs on Saturday at Hancock Stadium, a rare night game, which you don't see too much, but some night game action in September always feels good. I know a couple years ago when they played Northern Arizona at night, they did a fireworks show at halftime, and it was a pretty fun atmosphere. So hopefully that we can fill up Hancock Stadium this weekend because it's a pretty big one for the Birds starting off this season.
And under Spack, the Birds are really good on these home openers. They're 10-1 in these home openers, at least I would just say. And it seems like whenever they play a home game for the first game of the year, they kind of
always play
destroy,
a little fired up. Yeah,
always destroy the team they're playing.
Part of it is they're playing, you know,
like NAIA type.
You're playing
type school,
St. Xavier or Butler, but you know what? It's still
don't
reps.
Hit on Butler.
You got to get these experiences in. Hey, I'm a supporter of Butler. I like them.
They're the Bulldogs,
but they'll get after it. And it is the 125th season of Illinois State football, which is a pretty big milestone.
Huge,
they got,
absolutely. Huge.
Some new details coming up. I didn't realize that was coming up. I knew, obviously, college football has been around this long, but I didn't know the Birds had been around. Because we just celebrated the 150th anniversary of college football now for the Birds, number 125. And to celebrate that, they're going to be doing some special helmet decals every season. They're bringing back
every game.
Every
different game. They're doing a different helmet. I believe so. That's what I
got
believe
up
from
on
Mike Williams' Twitter.
I thought it was just home games. Is it every road game?
Home games,
too?
Home games.
Oh, it's every home game.
I think four or five. And they're going to keep the helmet, I believe, but they're just going to switch up the decal part of
it. I really like that because Illinois State, not just football but athletics, has a rich history of logos. They've really had some ones that might be out there. They're not afraid to take a chance. And I like that they're incorporating part of the school's history into that every week. And so that brings me to, because we talked about the X's and O's last week. We talked about how the depth chart's looking, some newcomers.
Let's have
some fun with it. Yeah. Let's talk some little bit of uniform swag. So you guys are working in the ISU football front office.
Mm-hmm.
Nike calls you up, says you could do whatever you want with the uniforms. What are you doing with them?
Well, whatever you want. So first thing I want, if you get whatever you want, but let's think of it in like a budget-wise kind of maybe.
Within reason.
Yeah, within reason. For ISU, they've had pretty decent uniforms. Yeah. They've switched up the numbers, I believe, this year, too, on the inside of their numbers for their both uniforms, I think. So, but I would want like some three types of alternates. I want an all-black type jersey.
Okay.
I feel like ISU, they use the black a lot. It's in the logo. It's one of the three main colors. Yeah. And I think you really don't see a lot of black. Like, maybe for basketball you've seen it,
Jose,
but for football.
Jose and I were talking about it off-air that women's basketball is the only team that does a black alternate because men's, they do a gray alternate.
And the gray is all right, but a lot of teams do a gray.
It looks so sick when you see the women's basketball team have that uniform on. You just cannot deny they look so great out there.
And a thing with this year's, I don't like the black face mask.
I was about to say that, too.
Because with the uniforms, there's no black in it.
It's mostly red and white.
Yeah, it almost seems like an NCAA Football 14 type created jersey. It's like there's just a black helmet or a face mask on the helmet.
Like they didn't finish editing.
Yeah, they didn't finish editing it.
But that was my point, Joe. I must have been looking at my notes or something because I like that.
Really?
Either go with the white face mask, because I think that's a clean look, or the red, and it kind of pops a little bit more.
Or like the chrome.
Or
even chrome, not silver. Chrome. There's not a chrome black, I guess. Is there? I don't know.
I don't know.
But a chrome, because I know Louisville, they had like a red chrome face mask, and that looked really sick. Lamar Jackson was rocking that. But also, you got to think about the type of program maybe it is at Illinois State.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like with tradition and everything, but some schools have kind of shied away from that tradition, though.
You look at some of the old ISU football uniforms, they've kind of changed it up from time to time. That they've taken some risks with it. Mm-hmm. I believe at times they've had red helmets, other times they've had white, different logos on the helmets. Sometimes they wear white pants with red jerseys, other times they wear red with it. So you could kind of do it within reason. I think as long as it's still a good-looking uniform, because I think they have a simple font, but it works. So if you do some different stuff with it, it could really work. A logo I'm excited to see them try, hopefully put on the helmets at some point this season, because they had it in the 80s and the 90s, is the one. It's a circle logo with Reggie Redbird with the giving it a thumbs up.
Yeah,
I like that one. If that makes its way back on the helmets, that would be pretty sweet.
One thing with the Z&D, real quick, I created our whole Z&D department in NCAA Football 14, and that helmet
really
is in the game.
No,
whole uniform.
That's one of my favorite ISO
logos. It is one of my favorite, and that logo, not that era with the mascot. The mascot during that era
was
pretty
good.
I don't know if anyone see that. It's on Twitter somewhere.
I tweeted about it over the summer.
Tweeted about it like probably 900 times.
A nightmare fuel.
But I really like that logo. I think that would look good. A good throwback. And like being here, has ISU football worn a throwback? I know basketball, they've done like the Hoosier pants almost.
Yeah, football, no.
I don't think they ever have.
The most I could think of, and this is me going super weird memory, but remember Joe and I called the Missouri State football game back in 2019, senior day. They wore white pants at home as opposed to red, and that was a big alternate uniform. That was the first time they'd done that in a while. So they really haven't mixed up their uniforms too much, but I think incorporating some of the history would be pretty cool to do that, especially with this being the 125th anniversary season.
And they kind of are, And I didn't really even realize they were doing that until today.
No, I feel like they kind of kept that under wraps.
They did. And at first, when I saw they unveiled it, I was like, why does this look like the same thing? But I was like, oh, wow, that detail.
Yeah.
And it's like a little ISU. You have to check it out on Twitter, Redbird Football. And
it's like the interlocked ISU.
Yeah, it's kind of like the socks almost.
I believe it's from the 70s is the one they're using this weekend. So it's kind of cool. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, anything you do to the uniforms?
Honestly, you got to go with something that's huge nowadays, especially in the NFL, the cleats. You know what I mean? You got to change up the color of the cleats, especially depending on what uniform you're going to go in.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these guys want to wear different cleats with different stuff on them. So, I don't know, like an all-black uniform and then, like, I don't know, some, like, maybe neon red or,
some bright red.
Yeah, some bright red cleats,
I would love to see Brock Spack rocking some of those. That'd be hilarious.
Because, he'd still have this traditional coach dress on the sideline, regardless of what the uniform is.
Yeah. And with those cleats, you can also add, like you guys just mentioned, the logos. You can also put them on there. You can stitch them on. And it'd be kind of custom made, especially if you had a reasonable budget to do it. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
So keeping things on the gridiron real quick, we'll talk a little bit about the game. They got Butler on Saturday, and look, this is a game they should win.
Oh, yeah.
Butler's
absolutely
in a different realm. They don't give out scholarships. They don't have the budget ISU has. They don't have the caliber of player. So we won't go necessarily into game predictions, but it's week one. Who's a player you're predicting to break out, kind of burst onto the scene, start the season on a high note for the Redbirds?
I think it's going to come from the tight end room. I think it's going to be Tanner Towle. He led the team in receptions and I'm not sure about yards last year. But I think this offense returns 10 starters, only losing Drew Himmelman, which is still going to have a huge impact,
definitely.
I think, because he's was probably the best offensive lineman in the conference last year.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that tight end spot really could do something for the Redbirds with Tanner Talla and Mitch Lewis. And I'm expecting a big game out of both of them, maybe even running some double tight ends, maybe even triple tight ends. So I think it's going to be interesting because ISU's also a big team with the run game and having those tight ends out there with play action. That can really open things up. And it can create easier passes and options for Bryce Jefferson, who's kind of been iffy throwing the ball, but maybe that'll change. Yeah. But yeah, I got tight end room for my little pick.
Okay, so you're going with it. You kind of cheated it a little bit, not going
well. Well, yeah, I went Talla, but then
I'll allow it.
Yeah, that's like the squad that's going to step up here this year.
The player I'm expecting to break out, because this is a player that, due to some injuries in the 2019 season, burst onto the scene when there were some wide receiver injuries, was Kasper Rutkiewicz. He might have been a walk-on that earned a scholarship. I'll have to fact-check that real quick, but he's going into his third year with the team, kind of an undersized slot receiver type. But what really impressed me about him was he had nose for open field after he got the ball. He'd run like some short routes, but could really extend plays with yards after catch. And I feel like with, you know, a quarterback that might isn't necessarily a gunslinger like Jefferson, if you could hit Rutkiewicz in the flats or something, and he could extend plays, that's a huge skill. And so if they can incorporate that in the offense, because Coach Speck really did enjoy his presence in 2019, that he made something out of nothing when there were some injuries. He stepped up, and now he's really listed as a starter, the wide receiver one on the depth chart. So I think he could have a breakout season, and I expect him to dominate on Saturday.
He's not scared at all. Like, he will run towards the person trying to tackle him. Like, he will put it all out on the line. And that wide receiver group is going to be really fun to watch. A lot of people returning, then you add Micah Jones. So that's going to be a really, really fun group to watch.
It's going to be a very gritty team.
A gritty Redbirds, man. It's going to be weird. Their offense might be better than their defense, but still can't sleep on that, I guess.
You really cannot. And in my opinion, I think, obviously, you got to keep it with the backfield. I think with Nigel White and Philippe Brown, you know, the roomies, the Redbird duo. They're the first Redbird duo to each run for over 100 yards in the same game since James Robinson and Markel Smith. So I think these guys are going to be huge for the Redbirds, and they really need to keep up that run game and let their quarterback kind of ease into it a little bit.
Yeah, and I think this week's really kind of like that. Try to get everyone, get the momentum going, get the pace of the game going. But you can't take any game lightly, though.
Right.
And Butler, they're a lower team, but they're also a very solid team for what they're playing in their division down below. So it's going to be a fun time to watch.
Yeah, and so keeping things in ISU sports, let's touch on soccer.
A different football.
Because Jose is our beat reporter for the ISU soccer team, and they're currently playing a non-conference game against Utah right now. So, Jose, they came off a couple tough losses last week to Western Illinois and to St. Louis University, I believe. But what have you been seeing from the team right now? Is this a trend that's going to keep continuing, or is this non-conference schedule making them better moving forward?
I think this non-conference schedule is going to make them better moving forward, to be quite honest with you. Right now, they're playing a lot of great teams. I know Utah's
really
record is 2-2-0, but they do play in the Pac-12, and they also beat a lot of great teams as well. So I think it's just going to take a little bit of time for them, but this is all, I think, leading up for them to be the best team in the MVC, because they really need to get over that hump, specifically Loyola. I know right now they've been outscored by teams by a complete by 71-59 on shots on goal.
Oof.
And they've also been outscored at the net 11-8, and that's like a total for this season. And right now, like we just mentioned, entering the game against the Utes, they are riding a 3-game losing streak. So I think this non-conference schedule was set up on purpose for them to get better.
And it's kind of confused me, touching on a little bit, how bad they're getting outshot. That's the opposite of what they had last year, that they really did a good job of suppressing shots and generating offense. Maybe they didn't score all the time, but they were keeping the ball on the other side of the field. And that's what just seems completely mind-boggling for me right now, is because it's virtually the same roster that's coming back from last season, but yet their problems have flipped almost.
They really have. Honestly, if you really look at their roster, like you mentioned, they have a lot of returning Redbirds who are entering for their fifth year, you know what I mean? And they also have a lot of incoming transfers and freshmen who are actually supposed to be really great. And it's kind of weird because Riley O'Brien right now leads the conference in goals with 3, while Sarah Lafayette and Natalie Von Lowe also have 2 goals as well apiece, and they're both tied for fifth. So you got you got 3 Redbirds
their
in top 5 scoring.
Offense has been there. Like, last year it was the defense that was really kind of anchoring it down, and right now just doesn't seem like that. And it seems they put Ashley Santos up at the center back position, I believe, last game out, too. So that was really, I wasn't expecting that at all, like Lowell's position change. So I mean, I think they're still going to be able to play well. They're playing Utah right now. Brad Sylvie, he's in 5 years. And another thing with this program, his fifth year now at ISU. Before, this Redbird program was really, really good. They were making a lot of conference championships, and it... Sylvie's been here for 5 years now and hasn't gotten that mark yet.
He really hasn't been able to get over the hump. That's completely it. They've played against great teams, and it's mostly Loyola that gets in the way, let's be honest.
Yeah. And we'll see how this non-conference schedule prepares the Redbirds moving forward. They're currently in action against Utah. That game is scoreless. It just started at 6. But that's all we have for the Redbird recap right now. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, though, we're going to have not just the Red Alert giveaway. That's coming up after the interview with Central Catholic head coach Kevin Brott. You're not going to want to miss that. Coming up next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. We're now joined by Kevin Brott, the head coach at Central Catholic High School. The Saints are coming off a big win over Pontiac last Friday, now moving forward to their Week 2 matchup. Coach, let's just start first with how great did it feel to be back playing in the fall with fans in attendance again after what was a strange year for high school football in Illinois? How did last Friday feel?
Friday felt good. It felt normal. The spring was challenging for all sorts of reasons, but to have fans in the stands, to be at home, playing in the fall felt good. It was nice to have, the crowd, and I think our kids fed off that for sure. And, last year, every game was like a road game, really. You know what I mean? Because there just wasn't people in the stands, a couple hundred at most.
Yeah, and so in year three, how have you been trying to combine establishing your culture and but also while navigating through a pandemic? Has it been difficult?
So the last year was – we had positives and negatives for last year for our culture. So, coming off my first season, we were 3-6, but we were competitive in every game. We lost three of those games on essentially the last drive or last play of the game, or had an opportunity to win the game at the last play. So we really felt, it was a very successful season. We felt more like a 6-3, 7-2 team because I would competed. So then going into year two, we had a lot of momentum. Our numbers were continuing to go upward. And then, when March hit in 2020 and everything was kind of unknown. Some of the things that helped us were we had really good leaders that year. We did a lot of things that we probably wouldn't have done if we were in a normal year. We were working out in-home workouts as a group, holding kids accountable to do things like that. We had, over 85% attendance in those for about a 2-month period, which was extremely challenging. Because there was no blueprint for that, guys. I was calling coaches. They were calling me. What are you doing? No one really knew what to do because there was nobody to really contact that had been through anything like this. So from that aspect, when we went back into our summer workouts, we had to be in pods of 9. So we did some different things that maybe we wouldn't have done that were good. And then we got shut down, and then we had fall practice. So all the turn-ons and turn-offs of the potential of the fall season were super challenging. But I will say we saw great accountability within our program. We saw people our attendance was fantastic in our I say off-season program. It really was a huge off-season program, we're just continuing to go on. But then when we got to the spring, honestly, with no playoffs and we've been going at it for so long, I don't think we had established our culture long enough to maybe maintain that huge gap, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense. And then you throw in the aspect that you're playing in the spring and you got seniors that are already thinking about graduating. But to their credit, listen, we didn't have the success we wanted in the spring, but as a coaching staff, we really took a different look at things after our first game. So our first game, we found out on Wednesday night that we were out 7 starters because of COVID tracing. So that really reset our mindset right after that game. We lost a close game to Monticello by a touchdown. And after that, we just really looked at it as this needs to be a developmental year. We want to compete. We want to win. But at the end of the day, we need to play as many young kids as possible, knowing that the short turnaround was going to be only a couple months later. And we were going to need those kids to be not just contributors, but starters on our football team only a couple months later. So we really kind of reset our expectations as a staff so that we could get our young kids on the field, still respect our seniors, that it helped us carry through that. And I think that showed dividends on Friday night. We played multiple sophomores a couple months ago, and we only had 3 seniors on the field this week. And all those now juniors played a ton of minutes, if not started as sophomores. So I think that, in fact, I know it's a long-winded answer, but really it helped us in multiple ways, although the season wasn't, from a win-loss standpoint, wasn't maybe what we would have liked. But I will say this feels like my second season, okay, if that makes any sense. Yeah, it just does. I mean, everything I thought my second season would be leading up in regards to where our culture is how I feel right now.
So did it kind of feel like a preseason almost in the spring season? Like, it just seems so short almost in a way.
Yeah, I mean, again, in December when we're sitting at home and we're doing, we're working out and we're getting ready for the spring season. No, it didn't. It was like, hey, we got a season coming up. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be a different time.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if there's not playoffs. But then I think when we got the news that some guys were out and we had nothing, no control over it. And if you guys know anything about coaches or specifically football coaches, like, I think we all have some issue with control. we like to control everything we can control, from every minute of practice to, when we're getting on the bus to when we're coming on and off the field to what we do during timeouts or whatever. So I think that lack of control, showed to us, hey, we might have to treat this like a college spring practice, like you just said, like a preseason. Let's get guys in. Let's compete. And our program, being only the second year for us, I don't know if, like I said earlier, we weren't maybe really ready to endure that type of stop and start, like maybe some other programs that have their culture well entrenched on what they, what is expected. I will say our guys were fantastic through the entire process. As we were trying to still define, who we wanted to be.
And now moving into year 2.5, we'll call it, your era at Central Catholic, where you played, where you had some success as a player. How are you maybe trying to bring the program back to where it was when you were there?
So day one, I just kind of went back to some of the old staples of our program, both when I was there and when I got my coaching start there, my first 3 years under Coach Bobby Mays. And then also took some things that I had, I had done at some other programs, specifically at Normal West. I'd been there for 13 years, the offensive coordinator under Darren Hest. I'm also a Central graduate. So, really wanted to just kind of let the kids understand that this program was built by a lot of people well before them, and a lot of the old traditions were already well ingrained in the program. They just needed to kind of be brought to light again. And that, playing at Central Catholic, it's special. It's a get to, not a got to, if that makes any sense. They get to play at Central Catholic. They don't got to play at Central Catholic. I know that's not the right, it's not the greatest English, but that's what we say. We say this is a get to, not a got to. So I think by bringing back some of those things and letting it understand the tradition and that there's people rooting for them that they'll never meet. They'll never come to a game, but they look at the box score every weekend to see, you know, how the Saints have done, and that wearing that gold helmet is a tradition. And we're fortunate to have the tradition we have because we talk about it's an expectation. It's not pressure. It's just an expectation. And we would rather people expect something from us than not care, you know, what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. And you have a Hall of Fame Hall of Fame football coach as an athletic director in Hud Venerable. How is your relationship with him, and how's that been?
So Hud and I's relationship is fantastic. So I knew Hud before I got the head coach. I actually coached against Hud when he was at Normal Community, and always had a lot of respect for him and his football teams. But, you know, just the last 3 years, I can't say enough good things. Number one, he's a football guy, which any football coach would tell you when their athletic director is a football guy, at least they know the struggles, you know, and the issues that come up with football. So that's number one. Number two, he was a fantastic football coach at multiple schools, big, small. You know, he was at Jacksonville, Monticello, and then went to Normal and then Lincoln Way. So having experience, you know, at a smaller school, you know, just being able to sit in his office and talk football from X and O's to administrative type stuff. You know, although I've coached for 20 plus years, this was my first head coaching job. You know, and I was mentored by numerous, you know, really well-read and respected football coaches. But having Hud there too as a sounding board, you know, when you might have some struggles is huge. And not even just on the football standpoint, just to sit in and, you know, just talk life, family, mm-hmm. you know, how you balance those things. You know, I have a young family, so, you know, football takes a lot of time and, you know, being able to talk to him, but he's been fantastic from an AD standpoint, but, you know, really just a really good friend also.
Yeah. Moving into kind of the football thing or side of things, when you're looking for a player to put on the blue and gold, play for Central Catholic, what are some qualities you look for in a player?
Oh, well, first of all, at a Catholic school, we'll take whoever we can get. First of all, but no, in all seriousness, I mean, I want guys that that are, you know, mentally tough kids that have the right mindset, that want to go into it and develop their skills. At Central, you know, with only 50, you know, right around 50 kids in our program, you know, we have to do a good job of developing our athletes through our JV program and through the way that we practice. So, you know, sometimes our JV level might not be as successful as they would like, but there's a lot of moving parts and we're pulling guys up and down. Really just want guys that have a lot of heart, you know, and if they don't know anything about the Central Catholic tradition, they're open to being part of it, because I think that's a big thing. And you know, other than just the basic intangibles, you know, we want big, fast, strong kids, but we want to develop that. You know, we have to develop that at our school. And, you know, our weight program is 3 years in now, and I think it's starting to show dividends in regards to the type of athletes we're putting on the field now. We are definitely bigger, faster, stronger than we were year one. But from a whole, I just want good kids that want to work hard, that want to compete, and I think we can teach them, you know, the football part.
As a former O-lineman myself, is there anything you like to feed the boys down in the trenches, or the special type of program you get putting them through during the summer to bulk them up or anything?
So our linemen, you know, it's a special group, as any lineman will know. You know, you don't get mm-hmm. you hardly get any praise. People only really notice you when you do something wrong, you give up a sack or you miss a block. But our two line coaches do a fantastic job with those guys. We have lineman meetings once a week where they go to our line coach's house, and they, I think last week they had wings and pizza and
all sorts of
stuff. It's probably not real good for you, but yeah. But they love and you know, and have some camaraderie there. From a workout standpoint, you know, our workout program is pretty much across the board. We will do some different things in the summer for them to to get their feet quick or work on some, you know, balance or stability stuff. As a lineman, you got to have good balance and be able to, you know, be quick and athletic and explosive, maybe not for, you know, 5 or 10 yards, but for like 2 or 3 quick steps. So we do some things there, but, you know, as a whole, nothing that anybody else isn't doing. I think for us, it's more about buying into that camaraderie, because it's a, you know, not everybody wants to be a lineman. Not everybody can be a lineman. Mm-hmm. And at Central, sometimes, you know, you got to take a kid that would be a tight end at another school, and he wants the ball, and you got to get him to buy in to be an lineman, because, you know, linemen are few and far between at all schools, and especially at a smaller school.
Yeah. And now one last question regarding this season. What are your goals for the fall 2021 season? Where do you hope that after week 9 Central Catholic is as a program?
Well, I think our goals at Central really never change, and they're not my goals. I think they're just expectations that were set well before me as a head coach, well before me as a player. And I think there's 3 things really, and that's to win a conference championship, to make the playoffs, and win a state championship. And that's, I say that pretty matter of fact, because that's just the way it is. I'm not saying that we're at that level yet, but that'll never change at Central Catholic. I'm not shying away from it. I'm embracing that. You know, I know the amount of work it'll take for us to achieve any of those. But I think from our team this year, you know, some of our goals, we have what we call a leadership council. We have captains, and then we have a leadership council that is voted on, that make a lot of decisions for our football team, and they set the goals. And, you know, they had set some goals early. And then my big thing is I want to make sure that they understand, you know, we need attainable goals, number one, and we need, you know, I want to know the application that goes with those goals. I don't just want you to say, hey, we want to, you know, make the playoffs. Well, how is that going to happen? You know, so we take their main goals and then we break them down into an application phase that really become our goals. So if one is, you know, make the playoffs, I want to know what that means to them and how they're going to achieve that. So, you know, if that's one of their goals, we're going to break it down and say, you know, we need to have no bad practices. And how do we accomplish that? We need to eliminate personal fouls in practice so they don't happen on the field. So things like that. I think goals at times, specifically for younger kids, you know, 14 to 18, can be very short-sighted, where it's just go 9-0, you know, win a conference championship. I think you need to be more, you know, narrow-minded on, hey, how do we get to your big goals by setting some smaller goals that will get you to that? Because in football, you practice more than you play. Mm-hmm. So we need to be really good in practice in what we're doing to accomplish any of our on-field goals.
Thank you very much for taking the time to do this. And best of luck this week and the rest of the season.
Yeah, good luck.
Appreciate it, guys. Anytime. And good luck with the radio program and everything you guys are doing. So I appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you so much, Coach.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks again. Go Saints.
Thank you very much to Coach Kevin Brott for coming on the show this week and doing an interview. Wishing the Saints best of luck this Friday night as they're looking to go 2-0 to start the year. And we have the giveaway we were talking about earlier. Redbird Athletics is welcoming back fans, and WZND wants to give you a VIP pass. The Red Zone is giving away Red Alert passes for admission to all games during the 2021-2022 school year. You must be an ISU student to win. There's only one winner that can claim this Red Alert pass today, so call right now at 309-438-1033. That is 309-438-1033. A special thank you to our sponsor, Redbird Athletics, for making this giveaway possible. When we come back, we're going to talk about some NFL football, keeping things on the gridiron here on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. Leo Stotter, Jose Sandoval, and Joe Kennedy with you here. Mm-hmm. And now, after we did some high school football, we talked about some ISU football already. Let's talk about some professional football here.
Let's keep it on the grid.
We got 3 Bears fans here, and the Bears made their final decisions on the roster. They have the 53-man roster heading into the season. There still might be some tweaks that are coming with it, but it's year 1 of the Justin Fields era. He's not going to be playing. we don't need to get into all that drama yet. We're going to have to do
Joey Dwyer and every guest that's going to come on.
What do you guys think? What should they play Fields?
Like,
there's so much more to talk about.
Because that's exactly right, Joe. There's other stuff going on that I feel like we need to talk. So, as Coach Brott said, you need to think of small goals to get to the big goals. So, what are some small things we could talk about with this Bears roster that help them get to the bigger picture, ultimately? Because we're not going to see Fields yet week one. What are some week one takeaways you have from the 53-man roster?
Yeah, I think it's going to... I kind of want to talk a little bit about the defense on the side of things. People are kind of forgetting that this defense last year really wasn't all that hot. It really wasn't all that great. And a lot of that was with Akeem Hicks out. Eddie Goldman was out. So that D-line was kind of getting pushed around in the run game, pass game. And then also takes away from Khalil Mack because he's getting double-teamed, triple-teamed. And Robert Quinn was just nowhere. This is kind of a prove-it year now for Robert Quinn. He has a chance to really... He could make up his money this year because after this year, the Bears do have a chance to cut him off and still owe him a little money, but not the full $15 million a year. So I think it comes down to this defensive side of the ball for the Bears, and could talk a little bit more about it. But, Jose, what about you?
Honestly, I think at this point, you really have to focus on the offense. Yeah, I think I think as the Bears, you got to go all in on your offense. And almost kind of like a Kansas City thing where Patrick Mahomes, where they're more offensive-minded, I think you got to switch it up. You got to switch it up. And especially the way the league is now, and it's kind of strange to say that, but the league is different than it used to be. It's offensive now, like a lot of sports leagues are.
If you think about the Bears, though, this Justin Fields had a quote about how the Chicago Bears are a defensive type of football team, and that he wants to make it now an offensive football team. And I don't see that happening. Not right now. At least maybe in a couple of years when Fields is actually playing. And he's the number one guy.
Let's talk about that real quick. The offense that maybe they didn't make it Fields proof yet or set it up for Fields, because you think about it. You always hear about how NFL teams, you have to win that championship while the quarterback's on the rookie deal. And so if you're already wasting 1 year of Fields' deal, I don't think you're setting up for success in the future, because this offense there's not one necessarily fix that can make it ready next year. Like the offensive line, you still don't know what you have there. You might lose Allen Robinson after this year. You don't really have much depth receiving. So this year, you'd think, should be about getting that offense ready for Fields, but he might be playing this year with a bunch of guys that won't be here next year. So like, what's the point?
Allen Robinson, I don't think he's coming back next year.
Think so
even
either.
The Bears should offer him a little more money. It was around the $20 million range, which is a lot. And it just is, I've been thinking about it, and it's like, I still don't know what I feel about it, but he's the number one receiver on this team, a top 10 receiver in the NFL. And after this year, he might be gone, and Justin Fields most likely will be the number one next year. And
but
who's
going to
be the number one receiver? Who's going to have? Maybe Cole Kmet will step up and become a breakout tight end. Darnell Mooney, we still don't know. He played 1 year.
And we talked about it a little bit off air, and there are some other factors that go into it, but the Bears haven't necessarily prioritized drafting or developing wide receivers here.
Mm-hmm.
Since Ryan Pace took over in 2015, they've mostly flopped with their draft picks at wide receiver and various reasons. So since 2015, you had Kevin White in the first round.
That's the big one.
Daniel Braverman in the seventh round in 2016.
That's
the seventh round pick. You had Anthony Miller and Javon Wims in the second and seventh round in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
In 2019, you had Riley Ridley, Darnell Mooney. Riley Ridley was the fourth round.
Fourth round, okay.
You had Darnell Mooney in the fifth round in 2020 and Daz Newsome in the sixth round in 2021. What are they, 1 for 7? Players that are still on the roster.
I just don't like this comparison, though, because only one I really don't... Obviously, Kevin White,
but
Anthony Miller. That's the one that really missed, because that's a second-round pick.
And that's my thing, is Pace hasn't drafted receivers in the first three rounds, really, ever outside of Miller and White. So he's expecting to find diamonds in the rough in the late rounds, and that's not exactly how you can do it in the NFL. You have to identify that talent early. And it just feels like they haven't prioritized the quarterback position by finding weapons at wide receiver. You've found a running back in David Montgomery, but who knows how many years of good football he has in him. So it just feels like this should have been something, when they drafted the quarterback, they should have already had a core of receivers and targets for him to throw to, and they don't really. You're banking on Marquise Goodwin finally putting it together in, what is it, year 10 in the league?
They do have the speed, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't complain about that. But with the wide receiver thing, I just think it's tough to really say it like that way, especially with most of those picks being after the fourth round. Like, you don't see a lot of, especially wide receivers, you don't see a lot of really star wide receivers after the fourth round. You do obviously have some, like Antonio Brown and such, but it's a running back position you can really get anywhere.
Yeah.
But I think overall, Bears, they're such a weird drafting team.
Yeah.
Like, first two rounds really aren't that great. Recently, kind of, but they've done really well in later rounds, especially on the defensive side of the ball with picking things up. So, I mean,
and now
I
defense.
Agree, though, with this offense. I think it actually might be a little bit better than it was last year. Yeah. I think their O-line's kind of finally back, and they've kind of added more, even though they kind of didn't. People are freaking out about this offensive line. Last year, it was terrible. It was like one of the worst offensive lines.
Oh, my goodness.
And obviously the loss of Tevin Jenkins for probably most of the year, if not the whole year, will have a big impact. And that's another thing. It's like, why'd you pick Jenkins when you knew he was hurt? We talked about that kind of last week.
First week.
So that's a little weird, but I think it's still going to be a decent offense.
I think that's just a lot hinges on it. And you're basically banking on, because they kind of made a makeshift offensive line last year.
Yeah.
As the year went on. And now you're banking on doing that again this year. And I don't know if you could capture that two seasons in a row.
But another thing for the wide receiver, they just got Breshad Perriman. He's hasn't had great years. He did have a really good end to his 2019 season. He was on the Buccaneers. He had about four games to end the year over 90 yards. After that, he got signed to the Ravens last year. Didn't see much out of him, so he's an interesting player. He's another guy under the 440, 40-yard dash mark, so another speedster. And he ran a 4.24, so that's kind of insane. He has 1,000 yards receiving. So that's good depth, I think, for that. He's a good wide receiver number three for the Bears, and I think they really could use him well with this speed that they're building up, but it's just weird with the quarterback situation.
It just feels like it might be a high school offense where you have like two targets that the quarterback's throwing to and not much of other weapons for him to go to. And with the defense being kind of shaky, that really worries me because this defense is aging and it doesn't feel like they have much of a collection of depth players to replace some of these players. Mm-hmm. Alec Ogletree might be the replacement for Danny Trevathan, but on the secondary, they are relying on Jalen Johnson to really take a big leap in year two in the NFL, and they don't seem to have the Kyle Fuller replacement maybe yet.
Yeah, maybe not. Today, rumors came out Kyle Fuller's on the trading block. And people are like, ooh, maybe a little reunion with the Bears.
With the
Bears. It's like, maybe.
Yeah.
Or, excuse me, not Kyle Fuller, sorry. Bryce Callahan, same team, Broncos.
Yeah.
But
Broncos.
That's a spot that the Bears kind of need at that slot corner. They don't really have a lot of speed on that defense.
And this is coming from a team that was one of the top defenses just three, four years ago.
Yeah, like the best, like one of the best defensive seasons in a long time. But I think Alec Ogletree, so Danny Trevathan is out till week four at least at the moment, but I don't think he's going to get back his spot. Alec Ogletree is a really good middle linebacker. He had a shaky end of the last year, and he didn't really get off. He was getting kind of thrown around on the defensive side, but he was with the Giants and kind of was just like, all right. But I think this preseason
he was really the most noticeable player on the defense.
Really noticeable, as you're saying. And I think Trevathan, he's been really well for the Bears, but he's also had some injury problems. He's older. But he brings that energy, though, Trevathan. And so does Alec Ogletree. And I think it's a perfect fit for them, too, even to split time.
That's life in the NFL. You only have so many years, and teams are looking for your replacement the minute they sign you or draft you because they're always trying to get younger and cheaper. Mm-hmm. And if they could do that with the Ogletree, that could really help put some more years on this defense here that could really help them there. But it just feels like they need to do that some other positions, too, because this is an aging defense that they need to make some other tweaks to.
Mm-hmm. And as we keep talking about the defense, what areas do you guys actually see that need to be improved almost immediately if they want to get back to peak form?
Probably secondary?
Yeah, secondary, definitely. But Jalen Johnson has had really good camp this year. Tayshawn Gibson, he said earlier today, I believe, in a press conference that he thinks Johnson, he's like, man, I haven't seen anyone like this kid. He has a chance to be a top 10 corner this year. And don't come back to me, or come back to me in about 8 weeks, and I'll say, I told you so. So, I mean, that's great confidence because he's obviously your teammate and everything. But that secondary, definitely shaky. Defensive line, it's tough because Eddie Goldman, he out all of last year with the COVID. He didn't want to take place. And then also during the training camp, he was out kind of with COVID too. So he actually got COVID and he was missing time. And Akeem Hicks is back, but he's also older.
Yeah.
And he's been hurt. And his agent has been at camp about three times now, which is kind of, you don't see that where a player's agent comes out to training camp. And so maybe their trade rumblings have been kind of circling around a little bit. And Bears fans all over Twitter are like, trade Akeem Hicks for Odell Beckham Jr. And like all these other receivers are like older type guys in the secondary. Even it's like, I mean, you could, but Odell is also getting paid $14 million a year as well. And he's not... he's coming off a couple of injuries and hasn't done much since 2018.
No, he hasn't.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's definitely the spot for the Bears on the defensive side of the ball, I would say. And another weird thing is just Nick Foles. Like, what's he doing here?
He's just kind of hanging out. That's the thing that's so irritating about that is he's taking up a roster spot that you could use on somebody else, somebody that might actually help this team this season.
Or, like, looking back at it now, you could have had Cam Newton over Nick Foles, and Cam Newton would have fit a lot better in this offense. He's mobile. He can get out of the pocket. You saw kind of what Trubisky was able to do, and Cam Newton definitely would have been a better option than Nick Foles, and now Nick Foles is just sitting here taking up all this money, $9 million, I believe, just for being...
I respect that hustle. That he's getting paid $9 million.
Yeah, I was just about to say
year.
That. You know what? Make that money, Nick Foles.
Yeah, like, all right, but, like, he did win a Super Bowl and everything, and, yeah, I don't know. He's all right. He can do... I don't know. It was a difficult year, I would say.
There's so much Bears talk, so much doom and gloom that I can't wait that we're going to have to keep doing this like the next like 16 weeks on this show. So at that point, I'm ending this segment here. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Bulls because you know what? They're young and exciting, and I have high hopes for them. That's coming up next on The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Keyshawn Evans from Illinois State Men's Basketball, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone with Leah Stoddard, Joe Kennedy, and Jose Sandoval. I almost said Joey Clark.
The Sandman. That's what we like to call him down here.
You guys are calling me down here. It only took us like 2 years to come
Enter
up with
Sandman.
That.
Do you know that song, Virginia Tech?
Oh, my gosh.
They walk out to that song. It's like,
are you kidding me? So I used to watch ECW, which is Extreme Championship Wrestling.
Ooh.
They had a guy named Sandman who would literally come in through the crowd playing. Yeah, it was so sick.
Jose is one of the best basketball minds I know down here. Yeah. Has just great opinions, great analysis. And since we're here, having him talk about it a little bit more, because it was a big off season for the Chicago Bulls. We touched on it a little bit in week one, but we didn't get to do it justice because this was the turning of an era for the Bulls this off season, what they were able to accomplish. And so now moving into year two under the new regime, Jose, where are you feeling right now about the Bulls? How are your thoughts on what this team's looking like going into the season?
So before we head into that, I'm going to give you a recap of last season.
Okay.
So the Bulls finished 31-41. They're short by a couple games for the play-in spot in the East. They also, during that season, about close to the All-Star game mark, they did trade for Nikola Vucevic, and they traded away basically four or five guys, which is about half of their team right there, and a lot of draft picks. And then towards the end of the season as well, Zach LaVine was out with COVID for 2 weeks, and you know he was also an All-Star as well. And then let me introduce to you guys the off-season moves that the Bulls made, which have me so excited for this season. So they sign and trade for Lonzo Ball for 4 years, which there's still a pending league investigation with tampering. Come on, let's be quite honest. Who doesn't do tampering in NBA?
LeBron gets away with it.
It's one of those things
year.
That it's like everybody knows it happens, that like it's almost accepted, but it's still technically illegal. Like I feel like
I get between owners or like the owner doing it, but like players
like you kind of know that happens.
There's a reason they put their jersey over their nose after every game talking to other players. They don't want people to know what they're saying because it's illegal.
They really don't. And then also as well, we did a sign and trade with San Antonio for DeMar DeRozan for 3 years. So Lonzo's here for four. We finally got rid of Lauri Markkanen in his contract, and we got Derrick Jones Jr. and two draft picks in return, which could help if we're found guilty in the tampering, because they could take away draft picks.
Okay.
And also we did draft Ayo, who is a U of I player, a Chicago product.
Yeah.
And we finally signed the European sensation, Marko Simanovic.
Yeah.
So he's coming over as well. And we signed Alex Caruso, Tony Bradley, and Javonte Green. So that is kind of the offseason moves right there. They only have 13 guaranteed spots. They need 14 before the season starts.
And I was kind of upset. The front court depth and Paul Millsap's now going to the Nets, and it looks like Aldridge, who's coming back from that injury scare he kind of had with his body problems, looks like he's going to the Nets. And the Bulls just don't have that front court help. I wonder if the guy you were just talking about, Simovic?
Marko. We could just call him Marko.
Yeah,
because
that's what they call him. Yeah, Marko. I followed him on Twitter. He had like 1,000 followers. Like, all right, maybe this guy will become something. But I wonder if like they're thinking about him as a guy that's going to be getting like a lot of minutes on this team. Because at the moment, you got Tony Bradley. Tony Bradley's not a bad guy, though, but you also don't really have much options at the power forward spot. Like, Pat Will, he's good on defense, not great yet. He's still really young, and he's also a little undersized, but maybe not in today's game at the four spot. So it's really – that's what I'm kind of worried about right now with this Bulls team is definitely the front court depth.
Let's talk about Pat Williams a little bit here because I feel like that's a player – that a lot could hinge on his development. If he develops into the player he was supposed to be out of college, that could be the superstar the Bulls have been looking for. Yeah. Go with this core. And does having players like DeRozan, like Ball, like LaVine now help his development because it takes a little pressure off him where he doesn't have to develop on the front stage, that he can kind of fade into the back where he's not the go-to guy right now?
I think that's exactly it. I don't think he has to develop really insanely well right now at this exact moment. He has plenty of time. The fans are kind of forcing him to be this next baby Kawhi Leonard, and like, no one's Kawhi Leonard.
It's not going
like,
to happen right away.
I think
away.
What he really just needs to do, improve to get this team better, get this team up to a 4 or 5 seed possibly, I think it's the defensive side, and he's already a pretty good defender.
Okay.
And so he's definitely going to be working on that in this offseason and definitely getting bigger up to guard people down in the post. If he can become a solid, very well defender, maybe even reach into that all-defensive team in the next couple of years, I think that's really what's going to make the Bulls a better team from his side.
And I like that because it feels like now there's not as much pressure on him. And I feel like in the last years of guard packs, that's what they were hoping, that Markkanen could turn into a star, Wendell Carter, all these guys.
Yeah.
You're banking on development to happen where it might not. But so now you went out and got other players, so that the fate of your franchise doesn't hinge so much on a 19, 20-year-old player, that he can kind of grow at his own pace and figure out who he is as an NBA player while there's another core of veterans that can help him do that.
And you're not wrong about that whatsoever, but I think at the same time, the front office is kind of like, it's playoff or bust.
You
signed DeRozan for, you know,
a bag
for literally, I think it was like $85 million. You also signed Lonzo for another $85 million close to it as well. And then plus next season, you have to figure out how to make salary cap for Zach LaVine because he's on an expiring contract this season. And he's going to get a big bag no matter what anybody says.
What if it'll be a max?
He definitely is. He had better numbers than Devin Booker last season.
Yeah, he is one of the best scorers, I think, in the NBA right now. And the team he had around him, in the second half of last season, he didn't play with Vucevic, like, barely any games. He played, I think, in total of just over 10 games, I think, with him, and over, like, 30 games possible.
And like I mentioned, he was out for 2 weeks with COVID. And during those 2 weeks, really cost us a playoff spot
they didn't have a
right
score
there.
At all, yeah.
No, we didn't. We did not have a second score, but now we do. And, you know, kind of talking about the Bulls, I kind of want to transition into kind of a little segment real quick. Is it Bull or not? So I'm going to ask you guys, you know, just a couple questions, and you guys give me, is it Bull or not? So let me ask you first, are the Bulls will be a top five seed in the East? Is it Bull or not?
See, I think it is very possible at the moment. I think the team can really go up kind of like, not exactly the Suns, but I think it's going to be more that Zach LaVine's really going to become a top 10 scorer. I don't think it's Bull, but I think it's really on the edge right there. Like, it's right
I think
there.
Five is exactly where they could be right now, and I think that could potentially be a good
spot to
be. I think
they could go up all the way to three, even.
I think just the East is that wide open where almost anything could happen, where
after,
it's
like,
not
the
as loaded as the West.
Yeah.
Like, so you have the first three, and then the Bulls could really be up that high, and I think that could be a good spot for them because kind of not too much expectations going into them in playoffs, but they could just enough to sneak up on a team could be.
I say that's the goal, the five spot, as you're saying. Yeah,
I agree with you on that as well. Right, I think they need to be either top four or top five, no play-in spot whatsoever in order for their season to not
anything
be considered.
It's like March Madness.
It was kind of like last season too. I mean, with all the injuries that happened, and then the Bucks ended up winning the championship, which, again, I think that's the only one they're probably going to win in the next couple of seasons. But let me ask you guys this, the next question. Will Lonzo Ball win Most Improved Player of the Year next season?
Oof. Ooh. Wow. That's tough because, I don't know, there's a possibility, but I think it might be Bull. Because I think in order for him to really become most improved, he was averaging, 15 points per game last year with 6 assists, I believe. He's really going to have to get, 5 or 6 more points per game to kind of get that, to improve from what he was last year. And with this offense now with LaVine, DeRozan, Vucevic, and even Caruso, Kobe White, they've got a lot of scoring options, and they kind of need him to be the defensive and playmaker on this team. So I think it's Bull.
And that's kind of where I was going with that. I feel like most improved player, it's normally a player that almost goes from a situation like Ball is in here where you're a depth player on maybe a loaded team and then go to a team where you're the number one, number two option. That's not what he's going to be here. So I just don't think he'll have the stats or the kind of won't have the chances that other players that could fit that bill a little bit better will have.
But you never know because Lonzo's kind of just been hanging around
there.
For
his credit, like, he has improved very much every year he's been in the NBA, maybe to a lot of people's surprise. So I've been very impressed with how he's translated from college to the pros.
And big baller brand, baby.
Big baller.
Come on now.
His younger brother's killing it.
Yeah.
But let me guys ask you another question. Zach LaVine will finish top four in MVP voting. Is it bull or not?
Ooh.
I think that's not.
I'm going with it. I like it. I like it because I. But
I,
the thing is with like yeah like kind of like the playmaking with him, like he's not going to have maybe the type of assists and maybe type of rebounding and defensive efficiency. So I mean. But that scoring could also outnumber that, and I think with the players he's having on this team, all that might go up as well. I think he could eventually get into that top four spot for an MVP voting, but that's going to be really hard to do. There's a lot of really good players right now playing in the NBA. So
I'm going to roll with it because I think this could be the Zach LaVine's kind of already been having his coming out party the last year with the All-Star game, the Olympics. He's building his brand. He's getting known in league circles. He's being talked about in all the national media. So I think... especially if the Bulls do kind of sneak into the playoffs this year as a 4 or 5 seed, this could be the trendy thing. This could be the year he sneaks into that.
Yeah, with the Olympics, like we got a little talk about that. Like he was like their fourth option on the Olympics, and that's a stacked team.
Yeah.
Like he was getting the playing minutes. He was getting put out there in the final minutes of the game. And when they were losing the teams that they should have beat, he was one of the best players out there. And that's with a lot of great players that he's got to learn from over the offseason and got to kind of bond with and see how they work their game and how he works their game, kind of just experiment with each other.
What Coach Pop did a lot during the Olympics was he would put Zach LaVine on the best guard of the other team every single time they're on the floor. So I think, and then plus, I mean, getting the experience to play with some of the other best players in the NBA who are also high-quality scorers, I think that's going to help him so much when he tries to mesh well with these guys. But let me ask you just one last, two last, it's a two-part, is it bull or not?
Yeah.
And it has to do with an awards. Billy Donovan will be Coach of the Year, and Zach LaVine will... Kobe White will win Sixth Man of the Year.
So both of them?
Because I think on this Bulls team, there's a lot of
Donovan,
guys that are good.
The Billy Donovan one, I think, might be very accurate. I think that one is good. But the Kobe White one might be a little bold. But he did average 15 points per game last year, and he was kind of coming off the bench, too. I like the Billy Donovan one. I think now he finally has this team that he's been given to him by the front office, and I think he has a chance to really show why he came to the Chicago team, to really be able to kind of get this team to go up from this lower seller team into the middle or even the top. I think that's a good idea with Billy Donovan, Coach of the Year. I find that.
Since I'm just keeping the positive vibes going here, I'm going to agree with that, too. I think it could potentially happen where, and again, kind of talking about Williams here, where Kobe White now, because of all this depth, can be a background player, and that could really help him here. Fortunately, that's all the time we have on this edition of the Red Zone. Jose, man, I wish we had another hour to talk about, because this was a great show. It's great to have you back on
the
show.
It was great to be on with you guys.
I like that segment, Jose.
We're going to steal it, just so you know, for future.
I know you guys will. Thank you, guys.
It was a great show. We thank Jose for coming on, being the pinch hitter for Joey Dwyer, who was absent. He'll be absent again next week, but he'll be back at some point.
He's got his Bishop Sycamore trial a little bit longer. Full week.
He'll be back at some point. But we also like to thank Kevin Brock for coming on the show, wishing the best of luck to the Saints. Always great to hear from him. Great to have high school football back in the fall. We got a stacked weekend of broadcasts coming up here on WZND. Three volleyball games starting with me, Jose, and I on the call tomorrow at 4:20. We're going to have football on Saturday at 6:20, volleyball on Saturday and Sunday as well, so you want to catch those. We got the red and white invitational home opener for ISU football. It's great to have all these sports back on the air.
Let's go.
Get these sports back when they're supposed to be after what was a busy spring semester. And if you thought you were sick of us, we'll be back just the same time, same place next week, 6 o'clock on WZND. It's Leo Sauter signing off from the
Red
Zone.
To hear this and other past episodes of the Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And, of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6 right here on 1.